There will probably be a wave of bankruptcies, but this is what we call the solar coaster. It's been going on for at least 18 years. And one of the reasons that it doesn't grind to a halt is that everyone really likes investing in solar factories. Everyone likes solar.
Times in the solar industry currently are both very exciting and extremely challenging. Exciting because, for example, according to Bloomberg NEF's global PV market outlook here in the last quarter of 2023, we'll see a 413 gigawatts of annual installations worldwide, which means that solar installations have more than doubled just in the last 2 years. On the other hand, we can see that prices for modules are almost in a free fall, which makes life hard for manufacturers, of course. And if we look beyond market dynamics, there's also a mixed picture. On the one hand, we heard that at COP28, state leaders agreed on tripling the share of renewable energies by 2030 already. And at the same time, we are still talking about the same structural difficulties solar has faced for quite a long time already. Grid constraints, labor shortages, price cannibalization, looming trade wars, or government regulations. So this last episode, recorded in 2023, will give you an insight in both quite some astonishing and at the same time controversial developments.
Welcome to the Smartery Podcast, a podcast for and with the creators of the new energy world. A world in which energy will be renewable, decentralized, and digital, bringing together electricity, heat, and mobility. Let us show you how we will get there and who will get us there.
My guest for this episode is Jenny Chase, an analyst with Bloomberg's NEF Global Solar Insight Service, which she actually launched herself back in 2005. More than that, she's also an author, namely of the book Solar Power Finance Without the Jargon. And with that, let's jump right into the episode. Well, welcome, Jenny. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Hello, Zach. It's great to be on the podcast.
And quite some numbers you have with you. I think they're not that surprising, but they're still very much noteworthy. According to Bloomberg NEF, solar installations have more than doubled in the last 2 years. I think it's a trend we've seen coming. And the trend we'll probably expect for the future as well. But how long can it continue like with this skyrocketing development? Do you think it's something that goes on until the end of the decade? Will it go on forever? What's your insight into this?
Well, that's the question that my team, the solar team at Bloomberg NEF, spent a lot of our time thinking about. Because when you're trying to make forecasts, you're trying to come up with what will actually happen. And everyone points to the growth in the past that's generally been pretty strong. Although I want to point out there are some years that have not been, where new build solar has not grown very much. And everyone says, oh, why don't you just continue that into the future? Which is fine, but you have to say where that is. And as it is, 413 gigawatts of solar were installed this year, roughly. I mean, we don't have the final numbers, but we probably never will. We'll get them a bit more final than this. And 240 gigawatts of that was in China. And so the biggest question is really what happens in China. And there are already some signs of negative feedback mechanisms for installation in China. For example, some provinces are and some counties, particularly in Guangdong province, are assessing the situation with the rooftop market and whether they can connect more rooftop systems to the grid without storage. And that kind of thing, just the market starting to think about what do we do with all this solar power that is generated on sunny days? Should we maybe slow down a bit? Those are the sort of negative feedback mechanisms that you see in different places, and they do cause individual markets to slow down. And we don't have another market like China ready to ramp up. There just aren't any countries like China.
Well, since it's such a singular market, maybe let's zero in a little bit on it. I think you've mentioned that 240 gigawatt installed alone in China in 2023. That's quite something. More than half of the global installation, actually. Now, you already pointed out what might be a bit special about that market. So what, on the one hand, are the drivers? The driver is really steep solar development. And in which sectors, actually, are they using the capacity they're installing?
So China has two main drivers. There is the Energy Megabase program, which is to use what the government calls deserts and wastelands, and build projects of somewhere between a gigawatt and 10 gigawatts out in mostly the western provinces, a little bit along the Yellow River, really big bases of solar and wind that then transmit the electricity to the cities. And that's one big driver for solar build. It's I think it's about 50, 60 gigawatts this year. And there's a small utility scale segment as well, which is fairly strong and is kind of in the middle. But the rooftop is also really big. China has these bulk procurement systems whereupon counties will allocate a single state-owned developer to go and put solar on all the roofs and find some kind of revenue sharing agreement with the local companies and people. And this has been hugely successful, particularly in Shandong and also some of the other eastern provinces. So basically, there's a lot of different drivers of solar in China, but none of them are necessarily going to drive another 30% increase in new build next year. I mean, 240 gigawatts is a lot. Growing a lot on that is tricky.
So to sum it up with the first two questions we already had, is that you're sort of hesitant on saying that this deep development will continue just already for this decade.
I am. And our official forecast is not such a strong growth. And yes, people complain about that, but people never can really identify where they think is going to be building a terawatt a year in 2030. So our 2030 new build forecast is about 740 gigawatts. And particularly the industry is like, oh no, we'll be building a terawatt a year by then, which I don't think is impossible. But bear in mind that world power generation capacity at the moment is about 8.5 terawatts. A terawatt a year of new solar is a lot.
So I was just going to ask that when you say your forecast is 740 gigawatt for 2030, that means 740 gigawatt being installed just in
new
the
build.
Single year of 2030.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. So we'll go over the course of the next 6 years, we'll go from the roundabout 400 gigawatt to a little bit more than 700 gigawatt per year.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, that still is a curve that's going upwards. On the other hand, a curve that's going downwards, almost in a free fall, is the cost for module prices all around the world. The latest trends at the moment are, I think we're down to 12.8 cent per watt for each solar 12. Module.
12.4 this week, I'm afraid.
12.4. It's even going down further. Now, how are those prices going to affect the global manufacturing landscape or the deployment of solar worldwide? I mean, it's like literally, I think specifically Chinese producers, they put out a production line and just a year later, it's already outdated, it seems like.
Well, it's Chinese producers because most of the producers are in China, but it's also everyone. I mean, solar manufacturing is a horrible business. And one of the reasons is that the generations of technology turn over very quickly. I mean, in 2018, it was multicrystalline aluminium back surface cells. I went off to have a baby. I come back and it's all monocrystalline silicon. And suddenly it's all PERC. And now just at the moment, we're shifting from PERC, which is passivated emitter rear technology, though I can never, passivated emitter rear contact cells, though I can never quite remember that, to TOPCon, tunnel oxidated.
Just in 60 seconds, you threw out, I think, four very different ways of producing
modules. Exactly. And that's what it's like. There's a new technology coming along every 2 years, and it's not hugely different. I mean, they don't look that different to a layperson, but they are just slightly more efficient and slightly cheaper. And so the factories making the old stuff are not worth much anymore. And those factories probably still have massive amounts of debt on them that were lent to the manufacturer by banks in the expectation of getting it back.
So how big of a problem is that? Is that going to affect the global manufacturing landscape or even then the deployment of solar?
There will probably be a wave of bankruptcies, but this is what we call the solar coaster. It's been going on for at least 18 years. And one of the reasons that it doesn't grind to a halt is that everyone really likes investing in solar factories. Everyone likes solar. And now governments are getting in on it as well. The US is supporting solar factories. India is supporting its solar factories. Europe is supporting its solar factories. And those just drive the solar coaster onwards. And yes, regularly, a large number of the companies fail, go bankrupt, lose their money, and the factories are mothballed. But it doesn't seem to stop the industry. In fact, if anything, you could say it accelerates the industry because cheap modules make it easier to make the economics work for a solar plant.
That's true on the other end. And now a market that sticks out there is the US market. I think modules there are then currently more than twice as expensive as what you said earlier, because they're around 25 cents per watt. Why do we have such a different situation in the US?
Trade barriers, mostly. So the US has this incredibly complicated network of trade barriers, some of which are purely financial and you can pay to get around them, and some of which are more complicated, like the paperwork required to get modules through customs after the Uyghur Forced Labour Prevention Act came into force last summer. The paperwork is quite complicated, and companies are only now making that work really smoothly. And if you've got a project to build, you really don't want your modules stuck in customs for 3 months while somebody considers the paperwork. So this has been a huge problem.
Okay, so that's based on a specific policy and also on bureaucracy. And how does that then affect the US solar sector?
It means that although the Inflation Reduction Act is very generous about what subsidies it pays to plans, the market is not expected to take off like a rocket, at least according to my US analysts. They're quite conservative about it could maybe be 60 gigawatts a year by 2030, which it's nothing compared to China, which is a sort of similar size energy demand. So it does keep the brakes on. The US market is like a car with the accelerator down flat. That's the Inflation Reduction Act. But the brakes, which are trade barriers, grid investment issues, grid queues, because there's not necessarily a good way of sorting out who gets a grid connection when it's available, and all kinds of labor shortages and local issues, they all keep the lid on that market.
So it's sort of like a schizophrenic scenario. On the one hand, they say pedal to the metal with the IRA, and on the other hand, they just have this big backlog of legacy problems, as you say, a bureaucracy shortage of labor, et cetera, et cetera. How is that in the specific situation in the US maybe affecting the global development? Or is it just a problem that's insular?
Doesn't really. I mean, I think that a lot of solar companies have stopped caring about what happens in the US.
All right. A neat answer, I would say. In that term, then let's focus on other areas. I mean, there's other exciting global areas such as Latin America, Africa, or Asia. Apart from China, then what are the most exciting markets to talk about?
Brazil is pretty exciting. It's about 13 or 14 gigawatts a year. And the major driver for that is a net metering policy, whereupon companies can net meter across multiple sites with up to 5 megawatts of projects. Although they do now pay some grid fees, which they didn't last year, the grid fees are pretty nominal and the economics of that market are still really good. There is a trade barrier planned, but again, in Brazil, that looks pretty irrelevant. It's not like the US one. It's just going to be paying a bit more money. And bear in mind that solar module prices came down 45% this year.
So when looking to Latin America, one should look to Brazil. And if looking to Africa or then again to Asia, which countries would you single out there?
In Africa, South Africa is the one where something is actually happening. Some of the big projects are coming online, but also the rooftop segment has grown very quickly, partly because South Africa has an appalling power crisis and really long duration blackouts. And people have been literally installing solar and batteries so that they have power in the middle of the day. So South Africa is probably going to build about 3 to 3.5 gigawatts of solar this year. And I'm also really excited about Nigeria, which has about 50 gigawatts of small diesel or gasoline generators, compared with 15 gigawatts of total grid capacity. And it's recently removed subsidies on gasoline. So people with running these fossil fuel generators are suddenly paying a lot more for their small scale generation. And that makes solar a lot more attractive.
And if we look to Asia?
There's not really a standout market. I mean, Japan has been building solar for a very long time and still is. Korea builds a few gigawatts a year. India is another complicated trade barrier market, but it's I would need to check whether it's now the third or the fourth largest global market that is a country rather than a region. Yeah, a lot of Asian countries are doing something. In some cases, I'm not totally sure what. Pakistan, for example, is buying an awful lot of modules for China, but I'm not really sure why.
Okay. So, but what I also got as a takeaway, just as a short side note, because as we record this, the COP28 has just ended a week ago. And I think, of course, there's also behind the scenes been quite some effort to get African countries on board, for example, for offshore diesel power generation. And it just seems like those schemes won't be price competitive with what African countries can do in regards to renewables or PV.
I think I hope so. I mean, there are all kinds of challenges to doing business in African countries, but I very much hope that most of them can leapfrog over the whole building a very centralized fossil fuel grid that we've done in currently developed countries and develop based on solar, based on wind, based on batteries. and go straight to the good stuff.
Now, of course, no matter where we look, whether it's been North or South America, if it's Europe or some countries in Asia as well, what always came up was the question of trade barriers or labor shortages. I think one all-time favorite on that list is also grid constraints. We come back to these every once in a while in every episode here at the Smarter E. At the moment, as we speak, end of 2023, in your opinion, what's the most serious bottleneck?
Grid constraints. As at the end of 2023, it's grid constraints. Probably all the way to about 2030, it's grid constraints. And after that, it becomes power price cannibalization.
And that would have been the last question I still have on my list. We talk about price cannibalization, which sort of is the term for negative electricity prices on the power market, when, of course, it's especially sunny and the grid is full of renewables. So to what extent do you think will batteries, electrolyzers, or other means of flexibility solve these problems in the next years?
That is the main question of my life at the moment, Zach. I wish I could give you a one-word answer. I really wish I could talk to myself in 2031 and find out what she says was the answer. That's what I really want on this question. How much can the grid become flexible to make use of power that is pretty much free, but only between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. on a sunny day? And the answer is, I just don't know. I know that this will be a real issue by 2030, probably to the extent that it slows down further build, because why build more solar when the power you're selling is mostly not getting a good price? But yeah, that's the big question. At what point does solar penetration stop? And I would say that also depends on where it is, because if you're somewhere near the equator, it's sunny nearly every day, although some places have some pretty long monsoon seasons. Whereas in Northern Europe, there is a huge anti-correlation between when the sun shines, which is in the spring, summer, autumn, and when we need electricity, especially as we electrify heat. And we are not going to be able to build batteries big enough to store power from summer to winter.
No, what's interesting, though, in your answer is that you think it'll be an even bigger problem after 2030, which means even though we still have more than 6 years to shorten bureaucracy, to shorten processes, to see how we can leverage automation for a quicker rollout of flexibility options, and we still have time to strengthen our grids, we won't be doing much of a big enough effort? Or is it simply because the deployment of solar at the same time is still growing so much?
It's because the deployment of solar is growing really quickly. And there are a lot more batteries than there used to be. I mean, I wrote the first edition of my book and published it in 2019, and I had to do a second one by 2023 because my book was kind of dismissive of batteries. And now I don't think we can dismiss batteries. There are a lot of batteries out there. Roughly 70% of residential solar in Germany and Italy built this year has batteries. But that doesn't shift summer to winter. And it still doesn't even shift anything in the shoulder periods. So it is a big challenge.
Well, thanks a lot. I mean, it's sort of really a mixed picture, I guess. On the one hand, solar is still roaring. On the other hand, there's some really serious challenges we need to be solving in the next year still. I'm quite sure I'll have the pleasure to be talking to you again and with the updated version of Bloomberg's NEF Insight into the development for the years to come. Thanks a lot for joining me today, Jenny.
Thanks, Zach. Have a good day, everyone.
Find out more about latest market developments, trends, and innovations at Intersolar Europe Conference, taking place from 18th to 19th of June in 2024 in Munich. Information about the event can be found at intersolar.de/conference.